All right, that was a real rough start to the show, and we are very late. Sorry, guys. We had some serious technical difficulties with getting the hangout started. Today it is it's the 26th of August, and this is the Refinery. I'm JD Bryden. I'm from the Free Radical Network. I'm here with Felicia Cravens, also of the Free Radical Network. Peter Rehm, also of the Free Radical Network, and Ryan of Conservative Union, who is muted at the moment. This is the Refinery, our weekly chat between the Free Radical Network, the Party of Choice, and the Conservative Union. We talk about conservative messaging and how we can better address people and bring them to our side. We have a lot that we want to get into tonight. Very nice press with the outdoor setup with the cigar going. One of the things that we were discussing in the lead up to the show, and actually we have been for a while now, is the topic of privilege. Brass in particular, that's one of the reasons why he's here. Tonight is he posted an article that a friend of his posted about privilege. Brass, I would love to hear a little bit of why you thought it was important to post that.
Oh man, how do I do this without ranting? My frustration lies with that. I see that sort of thing about having white privilege, and immediately the problem that I have is somebody saying, "Well, you were born lucky." And I'm thinking to myself, "Excuse me? Really? Where's the payoff of all this going to be?" Because I'm not buying it. And I feel like it's excuses that people are making for not succeeding, that people automatically come in with bias against me simply because of how I was born. Oh, I'm sorry. I am a white heterosexual male. Apparently, I'm part of the ruling class. Sorry, never got that memo. And
You're just the
so,
enemy.
oh, I am the enemy.
The public enemy number one.
Exactly. And but you and JD hate me for different reasons. So, not to put cold water all over everything, but
Especially this week.
especially this week, yeah. So I saw it, and immediately it just made me very, very angry because I don't feel that it furthers a conversation. I don't feel that it opens my eyes to, well, we're struggling. Well, really, I know you're struggling. My question isn't how you struggle. My question is how you overcome, not make excuses for why you struggle. I have a deep respect for people that overcome the odds and win, regardless of where they come from. What about that poor kid out of West Virginia who's a white heterosexual male, comes from literally a dirt poor family in Upper Appalachia and makes it? I mean, they made a movie about that, and that was where the kid became a rocket scientist. So, he did it because he was white. No, he did it because he kept trying. Why is it that we don't have that anymore? Why don't we honor success? Instead, everybody gets a trophy. And I feel like this is more of the same. It's just excuses for failure.
I think that's I think that's that whole thing, the concept of privilege, is a real differentiation point between us and the left. I think that, we're focused on what you do. The left is focused on, what you are, where you're from, your identity, not what you make your identity, but what your identity is from birth,
Right.
that sort of thing. And it's kind of crazy that that's where they're coming from on this. You would think that being progressive, it would be who you define, how you define yourself through your actions. Instead, the left makes it all about, your racial background, your sexuality, all of that stuff. And it is, I mean, it's mind-blowing to me that instead of approaching these things from a, you know, what are you doing and how are you going to succeed, it's what's holding you back and why, you know, here are these things, here are these barriers that are already on your back. These are these things that you were born with, so you can't overcome them. They're there, and we need to even the playing field for you instead of admit that the playing field is uneven for everyone. And it's how you succeed that how we get everybody to succeed, not based on race or based on anything, but just trying to create a good environment for success.
Well, I also struggle with the entire thing of that I am special and that I get special consideration simply because I'm white, because I'm male, because I am heterosexual. And I'm going to give you those three things for a reason. After 9/11, I lost my job about 3 weeks before it happened, just to give you a timeline. I decided that the best thing for me to do at that point, because the economy took a little bit of a downturn, was rather than to fight other people for jobs, I was given the opportunity to go back to school and have it paid for. So I said, you know what, I'm going to go back to school. Well, I wanted to look for scholarships so that I could help pay for that. Now, I got the first part paid for, but not the second part paid for. So I spent the time that I had that was being paid for looking for scholarship money to go to school. And I got a book that was about an inch and a half thick, just filled with nothing but scholarships. And all it was is the name of the scholarship, who qualified for it, and where to go for information on how to apply for it. Pretty basic, pretty straightforward. So I started combing through this and doing spreadsheets and stuff. Well, I found out that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I wasn't qualified for because of the field that I wanted to go into. For example, they had scholarships for dentistry. Well, I wasn't going into dentistry, so obviously that scholarship wouldn't work for me. But the more I started looking at some of this stuff, the more I was like, all of these are geared for people who, quote, have a setback in life, being black, being a woman, being Latina, being blind. And then, of course, the field that I wanted to go into. And I remember thinking to myself, man, if I was a blind Latina woman who was part black, I could get a scholarship to be a dentist.
I just want to address one thing there. I mean, setback. This is using their terms. I mean,
well, I'm using their terms deliberately because I don't consider it a setback. I just consider it to be the way you were born. And for all the, quote, push for racial equality and gender equality and whatever other equality that we have, I find it remarkable that this United States pushes so hard to define that which separates us rather than to patch it over and cover the cracks so that we become united, so that those distinctions blur. It's as if they want to highlight them, which they do, rather than make it blur. They sit there and tell us we want to blur those things, but then they spend all their time driving wedges into the cracks to divide us further, and that frustrates me. You know, for me, it's like, hey, okay, you have an opportunity to get a scholarship. Fantastic. But, you know, when I went through that, I think I found 4 scholarships in the entire book I was qualified for.
So. Well, and I think you're exactly right when you're talking about the division and the classification. This is a philosophy that wants to have it both ways. By being different, by being other than the norm, whatever that may be, whether they're talking about white, heterosexual, maleness, or, you know, just white in general, or whatever. The whole thing is designed to not give a person the logical discussion about whatever the topic may be. It's more often designed to provide a barrier, an indestructible defense against whatever criticism or whatever obstacle might be coming. It's talking about, as you had said earlier, about how they're staying in those situations rather than how to overcome them. And that's a big thing. And this, JD will go into this, I'm certain, about it's just designed to shut down debate as well. And if we recognize it for that, then I think, you know, we can start to make headway against it. We just have to remember that it's a tactic. There are people who really and legitimately believe that, but it is a definite tactic.
For sure. It is absolutely a tactic meant to shut down the discussion and debate. Because if you're going into things and saying that somebody has an unfair advantage, you know, I mean, that hurts. It makes it very, very difficult to get back. Corey in our chat here says that it's a rhetorical safety net, and that is absolutely correct. You know, it's there so that, oh hey, we don't get to be held at the same level of accountability as you do, because you already have XYZ advantages, so you can deal with it. It's funny because in debate, the more quote privileges unquote that you have, the less privileged you are when it comes to being in that discussion, because you know what you say gets shut down pretty quick. I mean, that's what it's meant to do. And something I want to really address here is that it's not like there isn't some truth behind the concept of privilege. I mean, it's hard to argue that there are, you know, not setbacks or disadvantages that you start off with, comparatively speaking. If you're born in a low income neighborhood, if you have a, you know, single parent that you're born to, stuff like that, it's hard. It really is legitimately hard to succeed the same way that it is for somebody who has a two parent home. That's not saying that you can't, but the difficulty is much more. Absolutely, that is the case. The problem is that is not an excuse to say that the playing field needs to be demolished and completely set back for the other person so that you can have a level playing field. It just doesn't make sense there.
Well, it doesn't make sense for a lot of reasons. You have people saying, essentially, this is what the left is essentially saying, generations before you ever came along, and I'm going to use you, Jersey, in part because you're younger, okay? And that's not a bad thing. It's just simply you're of that age, okay? So don't worry, I was young like you once, too. Eventually, you'll be crotchety like me. trust me, you grow into it. But you all have that to look forward to. This is him when he has hair later. Anyway, so what happens is somebody comes along and they say to Jersey, I'm sorry, you can't have what your family had before because your family had it all before, but simply because they had it before, now you're excluded, so we have to give somebody else a turn. Because that does two things. It says, number one, we're excluding you, so basically it's ring around the rosy, and this time we're going to pin the tail on you for who doesn't get. Two, it says the resources are finite rather than the resources can grow, which is really the key. We keep saying to people, oh, there's only a certain amount, rather than, guess what? We can keep growing this so that we can include more and more people. And the left simply says, no, there's only 1,000. We can't ever get to 1,001. Maybe if everybody else, you know, had a little bit less, we could get to 1,001. And everybody on the right, maybe not everybody, but the right says, no, you can take 1,000 and you can make 1,500 and then 2 and then 3 and then 5,000. Pretty soon, you can have a lot more people doing this. And I think part of our issue with messaging is we don't say that. We don't say, well, wait, hold on. This isn't about a finite number of resources. This is about growing them so that more people can have, so that we don't have to have this thing of, well, let's review where you're from and what your cisgender is. That's not even a word. That doesn't matter. But the stuff like that, none of that should matter. It should matter how well did you do in school. It's based on merit. And there, you get a scholarship.
Well, and let's look at what we're talking about in this country. The people, the gap between the folks who are assumed to have the highest privilege, which would be JD, and the people who have the lowest, which would be people that are, you know, minority and transgendered and whatever. The gap there is so minute compared to the gap between your average American and the average citizen in other parts of the world. And so when we're talking about privilege, they're arguing on the margins worldwide. But in this country, they attempt to blow that up to mean something huge, to be highly significant. And another thing that this tactic does that really irritates me is it just takes people as part of groups. It has nothing to do with their individuality. And it de-individualizes them. It collectivizes them into, well, if you check all these boxes, this is your experience, and that's what you're stuck with. And that is a horrible, heinous thing.
Well, it puts people in a box automatically. It labels them automatically. What if you don't want the labels? What if you want to step outside of the, quote, box? I don't want to start using corporate speak because Fishy's going to just, like, freak. But, yes, I know. But the reality is that I don't think many of us want to be put in a box. I don't think that there's many of us that want to wear labels, with the exception of the shirt that I'm wearing. But, you know, we want to choose rather than having it assigned to us. Isn't that what this is about?
Well, it depends on which side of the privilege line you're on, doesn't it? Because people who are claiming that there are so many people with privilege and therefore, you know, given a head start or, you know, a extra feet of the, at, you know, ahead of the starter line or something like that, that they start with the first quarter of the race already run for them. Yeah, there's some legitimacy to that in a way because I'm telling you, trust fund babies got it all over what I've got, privilege-wise. And they didn't earn that. And, you know, but that's not to say anything about what I'm capable of doing. That's only to say that they have a particular set of circumstances that have allowed them to be very much more fortunate. But that's what makes the country. You have something to look at that says, you know, that guy did something. I'm going to aim for that. I'm going to shoot for that because I know that that is the thing I want to have. That is the place I want to be. And we sort of stop that instead. We sort of say, well, everyone needs blah. Everyone needs a college education. That's how we got into that mess, don't you think? Everyone needs to have this, that, and the other. Again, it takes so much out of the individual, and that is the problem. It's a collectivist worldview, but those phrases don't mean anything to people when we're talking about it or when we're fighting against it. There've got to be other ways to handle it other than saying, well, you're just trying to be collectivist. I mean, that's weak sauce.
Well, I think one thing is you don't attack the collectivism part of it. You attack why that type of logic fails and how you're actually stealing from people. So you use their own logic and their own emotions against them. You ask, would you like it if somebody stole from you? Well, no. I mean, the answer is always going to be no. You ask them, what if somebody stole opportunity from you? How would you feel about that? I am going somewhere with this. Let me ask you, Fishy. How would you feel if somebody stole an opportunity from you? Would that irritate you? Would you be angry?
I don't even know what that means. Is somebody cut in front of me in line? I can't even relate to that phrase.
You can't relate to the phrase, somebody's stealing an opportunity from you? You know, you could have an opportunity to be something or to do something, and it's robbed from you. I still don't get that.
That's too vague for me.
Too vague?
Did okay. I miss out on a job because somebody else was cuter? Yeah, that's happened. Yeah. But I don't know that fits in your category. I'm not sure what you're saying.
Okay, what I'm getting at is that people can, when we start saying, oh, well, you didn't have that growing up, so I'm just going to give it to you. I'm reminded of the story of the butterfly in the cocoon. And a butterfly was struggling to get out of a cocoon, and a scientist was watching. And so what he did is he cut the cocoon open so the butterfly could easily get out. What he discovered was that was a tremendous mistake. The butterfly has to struggle in order to get out, in order for its wings to have blood and flow and thus be able to fly. By cutting open the cocoon, he took away its ability to fly, and it never flew. So the struggle of getting out of the cocoon was necessary for the butterfly to fully develop. How many people are we robbing of that opportunity in this nation to fully develop and grow and become something amazing because we just give them stuff? It is the struggle that defines us. You know what defined Michael Jordan by his greatness was not that he had this innate talent. It was the fact that he was cut from his team at such an early age, spent all day crying in his room, then practiced his butt off for a year, and never stopped with that drive to become one of the greatest basketball players ever. Now, I can have the argument over who's greatest, but that's not the point. The point is his greatness was defined by his failure, not by his innate ability. And people have a tremendous amount of respect for him because of what he overcame.
So, Peter, I want to go back to where you started asking the questions. Do you want an opportunity taken away from you, or do you want something taken away from you? I've tried to use that in conversations often with people on the left, and I've kind of said, you know, do you... if you worked hard for this, would you be fine with someone coming and taking this? And in almost every case, I think they've been trained. I think the left is ahead of us in knowing where we're going. They've been trained to say, well, if someone needs it more than me, that's fine. I'm like, really? So if you worked and you earned this, you needed this, then you'd be okay with someone taking it. They're like, yeah, they need it more than me. It's totally okay. So I agree with your premise. As far as messaging, I think it'll work with the apolitical person. But with the people on the left that are into politics and have been trained by, you know, Soros groups and Clinton's groups and Obama's groups and Acorn and things like that, they're prepared for those questions and know how to answer and kind of disarm you. I mean, you can't really argue with someone when you say, would you be okay with someone coming into your house and stealing your stuff? And they say, yeah, sure. There's really
where I think you're onto something there, Ryan. Where I think you're onto something there is if you phrase it about their children instead of themselves. You bought your kid a bike that they had earned through chores, and somebody takes it. That's a little bit different.
Yeah, that personalizes it.
And I honestly think they're trained just to say yes, though. I think they're trained just to say yes to disarm, no matter what. I think they're lying. I mean, you're not okay with that if that would really happen. You're going to say yes just to stop the argument. That's what all their tactics are, is to stop the argument.
There's one real... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, JD.
No. You, Andy, please. You have the expertise on this.
They fell for it. You do realize that I'm not a real person. I'm a voice that she's typing into this thing and making my voice come out. It's really... But that's what marriage is. Anyway,
I knew it. I knew she was the brains of the outfit.
Oh, yeah.
You sound better than Siri, but anyway.
It's like I always tell people when I go speak. Corey is younger than me, better looking, smarter, more fun, has more friends, is better in every conceivable way, but honestly, I think I could have done better. That's what I think. But anyway, here's the problem. Your line of reasoning is fantastic, Peter. It is. Here's the problem with it. You're saying... how would you like it if someone took away your opportunity? The left has already conditioned. They know that that's a fantastic line of reasoning, and so here's what they've done. They've gotten a country hooked on security instead of opportunity. Okay? And so this is why I push, you know, this thing that I call back in business. You know, we've got to get people hooked on opportunity, get them back in the workplace, get them hooked. You know, one big problem to me with conservatives is we don't believe in capitalism. And I hear back, what do you mean? We all believe in capitalism. No. You believe it works. You don't believe it sells. Give them...
Oh, that's rough, but true.
Give them a taste of capitalism. Why are we not going into the inner cities with something like Back in Business, using these, you know, having these welfare things, block granted estates, and going and saying, okay, you work 20 hours, and we're going to place you in businesses in the area, and you are going to, and you guys, a lot of you here know the thing, I won't bore you with it. But, you know, get them hooked on being needed every day, showing up to work and being needed and having people need you and looking forward to seeing you. Getting hooked on being productive and needed. That, you see, until then, they're hooked on security, and you say, how would you like your opportunity taken away? That's like saying, I don't even know, that's like saying to me, how would you like your feminine clothing taken away? Well, I don't wear that. I don't even know what that is, at least not often.
So in other words, I have to put it in terms that they understand rather than just a concept.
Well, and also you got to go to them and start and we have to, as a movement, go to them and bring capitalism to them. Rand Paul tried to do this with enterprise zones, you're reviving those. I look at things like Back in Business. We have to go to them, otherwise we're just going to watch them be bussed to the voting precincts, blowing us away.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that came to mind when we were talking about all of this and I was listening to what you all were saying, I used to work with high-risk youth in inner-city Denver, like the worst part of town possible, drive-by shootings, bomb threats, you've got it. And one thing that I saw when I was down there is that they believe they don't have any opportunities. They believe all of those opportunities have not only been taken away, but are completely out of reach. And so you have to break through that wall, too, because you have to explain to them, you know, find out, like if you're trying to connect with their heart, find out what interests them. What is it? What is one of their dreams? What is something that they would like to accomplish? And then help them reach that goal. And then once they reach those little goals, they start to build self-esteem and confidence, and then they can reach forward for those opportunities. In fact, one thing that's really kind of disheartening when you're working with that type of an audience is that a lot of them think that not only don't they have the opportunity, but that they shouldn't have the opportunity. And I never really understood that mindset, so that's kind of like one of those. There are a lot of people who aren't that far.
Corey, you broke in and out there, so if you could repeat that.
Where did I start breaking up?
It was intermittent, so like the last 20 seconds of what you just said.
Okay. So let's see. As far as talking to them, there are a lot of people in that situation, and I saw this especially with the kids, who they not only think that the opportunities have been taken away from them, but that they shouldn't have those opportunities, like they shouldn't succeed. And so those people you may not reach, but there are a lot of people who aren't quite to that point. And so if you take them through baby steps and you are there to help them, don't just say, well, here, let me give you this opportunity. Great, let's go, you know, go for it. You've got it now. You have to actually show them and teach them and encourage them along the way. It's kind of a mentoring process.
You know, we conservatives too often want, like I said last week, we describe conservatism as us being left alone. That's not conservatism. Conservatism is us reaching out. Conservatism is us reaching out. And do you just get excited by yourself excelling and succeeding, or do you get excited by others doing it? And I'll tell you what. As a guy who has also managed movie theaters, you know, with kids working for me, you know, young people of all colors and persuasions, there is nothing like seeing some young, tough guy realize, wait a minute, I can actually be productive. I'm actually important. I showed up today and everybody said, oh, thank goodness Bob's here because, oh, he can help us, you know, and for them to feel important and needed, and rather than suddenly they're not looking for security, they got something better.
And it's great that what you went to was something that I've been thinking a lot about too, relationships. We keep talking about the drive-by campaigning that the right has done, but you're talking about establishing relationships, whether it's you and your work or whether it's Corey and her volunteer work. It's the same thing. It's showing up on a regular basis and connecting with people who then can get that solid stream of better perspective out of you.
And it's fun. The reason we don't do it, though, the main reason, let's defend conservatives for a moment, we're afraid. They hate us so much. We go into those communities, they hate you, they hate you. They group together in their like colors and so forth and talk about you at break and so forth. Get past it. Love them through it. They will come to you quickly. You'll be surprised.
This is something I've been wanting to talk about for a few weeks. End of July, Simon Sinek was on Glenn Beck for the whole 3 hours. And one of Simon's points that I wanted to talk about was he talked about service, and it releases a hormone that causes great feelings. I'll eventually write a blog post on it when I get around to it, but it causes the deep feelings of love and loyalty and trust that you see in families and close friendships and things like that. And as you serve, you get more of that. The people around you get it. And he told a story. He was walking down the street in New York, and someone that he didn't know dropped something on the street. So he bends over, helps the person pick up all the papers. He felt good about himself, got kind of a temporary high. The person that he helped felt good. He said, thank you very much. They went on their way. He got down the next light on the street, and a stranger turned around and said, I saw what you did back there. That was really cool. And his point was, he felt good, wanted us more. The person he served felt good and would pay that forward to someone. And bystanders and onlookers also saw that and saw that that was a good thing and probably went and served someone else. So if we can get into the communities, like Andy said, get past that they hate us and just serve them anyway. You don't have to talk about politics. You don't have to talk about anything. Ask them about their life and just be there to listen. It'll make everyone involved feel better. Get out there and serve them.
Well, and
And you know what you're demonstrating really quick? You're demonstrating you don't believe in a zero-sum game. You don't have to get yours. You can give yours. Because you believe there's more coming. Anyway, I'm done. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that one of the things that's bugged me about the Republican Party in general, but we keep talking about outreach to these communities, outreach to these, we have to reach out to them. I keep asking myself why. And I hear the reason, which is, well, you want to reach out to these communities because then you can get more voters. Well, that to me kind of falls into the whole thing of, and I'm going to pull in a little church here for those that aren't, just bear with me. But when I grew up in church, it was like, well, you have to go witnessing and you have to get people to come to our church. And I thought to myself, why are we working so hard to get people to come to the church when Jesus clearly said, go ye into the world, not get the world to come into this building and or a set of buildings or whatever. In other words, the church is supposed to go out and be part of, be in the world, but not of it. And I use that as an example because, to me, Republicans should go out and be everywhere, or more specifically, conservatives should be everywhere with all people everywhere. It's like, okay, I'm in a black community, not because I'm trying to reach out and get voters, but because, you know what, there's opportunity here because there's people that are hungry for it. There are people here that are hungry, and I'm willing to reach out to them and suffer through whatever it is I have to suffer through, knowing that in the long run, the payoffs will be tremendous because I get to see people realize their dreams, because I get to see people succeed, because one of these people out here is going to have a tremendous product that they're going to develop, and guess what? I'm going to get to buy that product, and my life will be better because of it. And I don't understand why we just don't do that. And as a result, people then say, well, wait a minute, that guy's conservative. I believe what he believes because I can see the way he lives, because he's such a great example, and because he's been here for 20 years doing this over and over and over again. To me, it's more than just setting up an outreach office. So,
but what you're saying is just completely unreasonable. That means that you want us to actually, you know, work in communities and try and accomplish things.
You know, it's no mistake I'm smoking. Since I'm the privileged class, I figured I may as well just go to the hilt, okay?
Yes, exactly. It is a pipe dream, in fact, to think that we would want to go to these communities and actually try and help. It's crazy talk.
Pipe dream, cute, but I'm smoking cigars. But anyway, No. Also, I just wanted to plug Simon Sinek. I absolutely believe most of what he says. It is tremendous. He's right on about that. So, and yes, I saw that little Simon Sinek thing. Not the whole 3 hours, but yeah. So, good guy. And he's right. You get a good feeling from service. It's just tremendous. So,
speaking of service and getting back to privilege a little bit, I want to talk about some of the ways that we can use privilege to our advantage. The left talks about privilege, talks about the 1%, talks about people who are, you know, so incredibly, you know, born on like the half inch between the third baseline and home plate, talks about that sort of stuff. But some of the privilege that they don't talk about, think about the kind of privilege that you get if you are an elected representative. Talk about the privilege that a senator gets. Talk about the privilege that a congressperson gets, and how absurd it is to talk about the 1% of business people when you're talking about such a small segment of America that is in control of so much. That's serious privilege going on there in D.C. The D.C. privilege, that is huge, and it's huge because of how big the government is. And you can use that in discussions because, I mean, it's hard to argue against the fact that these are extremely privileged individuals.
And look how much they're doing for the people. They keep touting their record and saying that we're bringing this to your community or we're helping the community get that. But what really seems to be going on is a whole lot of promises. I mean, you can hear that even now, years after President Obama was elected. Certain people in Congress are having a little bit of a problem. Some of them are, you know, ending up hearing from their constituents that they're out of touch. On both sides. I mean, I'm not even just talking about Democrats. Say Eric Cantor was a thing. That happened. And the number one reason that you're reading about when you read about that particular primary was that he was out of touch with his constituency. Okay, so what better opportunity do you have? And this goes along with something else we've talked about before, but to set up that power structure of big government as a blockade, as a, in your narrative, as a roadblock rather than something that assists people. And if you can contrast that with behavior from people in the conservative movement that are not elected officials who are actively working in those places to help people succeed at whatever it is that they want to succeed at, then you have a better chance of drawing that dichotomy that says, that guy's out for him, I'm here to help you. This is what real help looks like. And they'll see it in a practical way in their lives where a politician's promise won't mean so much anymore.
You know, the left, I mean, look at our basic sales pitches. There are three of them. Fishy just described the right one. Okay, I'm coming to you because I want to see you succeed. Okay, that's the right one. I'm not coming to you so I can get you to agree with me so there will be more people like me and I'll feel more comfortable in this society. You know, I'm coming to you because I want to see you succeed. I believe that whatever I'm selling is good for you, like with capitalism. Okay, the left has a terrible sales pitch, but it's better than what we've been doing. It is, I will show you, I will convince you there are villains. And if you give me 51% of the vote, together we will bring them down and take what they have, and I'll give it to you. I will rob for you. Okay. now that sounds pretty bad until you look what our sales pitch has been. I will ignore you and hoard together whatever I can because I believe all you want to do is steal it. Compared to us, we actually make the left look good, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do.
I would like to point out we are really, really good at it.
Well, okay, yes, we are going with our skills. That's true. We are going with our skills, and it's hard to argue with that.
But the good news is that I think that we're seeing a lot more, just going by what FreedomWorks has been doing, going into communities and talking about empowering people. Empowerment, not entitlement, is something that we've been hearing a lot lately. We have been branching out, and I think we have been going into communities and trying to help more than we have been before. And as you said, Andy, Rand Paul with the opportunity zones, trying to get that through, which would be amazing if we could do that, because removing those restrictions, I mean, we could revitalize a whole lot of places, and not just urban communities, but rural communities in Appalachia could certainly benefit from those kind of changes to the way that we enforce regulations. Ryan in the chat here, in the group chat on the actual Hangout, mentioned something that I wrote about my article I wrote last year on privilege, because I think it's not something that we as conservatives think about too much. We just sort of dismiss it, out of hand, because it sounds like such a ridiculous concept, and it is to a large extent. As far as the left uses it, a poor concept and something that really shouldn't work, but does. I mean, it absolutely does. There are people who, when confronted with the privilege argument, shut up. They absolutely do. That, you know, they realize, oh, hey, I did, you know, have it better off than you did. And, you know, I didn't have to go through all of the stuff that you did, struggling growing up, you know, not having enough food, going through all of those things. But it playing by those rules, playing in that environment, does allow you to have some openings, some ways that you can respond to their arguments. And one of the things that I think is really underutilized in the privilege game, you know, we talk about how people are basically saying, oh, you know, they're playing a game of I'm more, I have less privileges than you. I mean, that's basically what they're saying, that I'm more oppressed than you are. If you go through that, logic, who is who is the most oppressed class? Who, going through all of that, tell me who you think the most oppressed subdivision of people is. I mean, anyone? Hands up, anyone? Andy, give it a shot. Tell me, Andy, who do you think has the least privileges?
It has to be a straight white male.
No. Andy, who has the least privileges? I want to hear from Andy.
Well, outside of Packer fans?
I said least, not most.
You don't appreciate our beauty. You never have.
Now, hang on.
Mom always loved you more.
Hey, you know why guys should date girls who are Vikings fans?
Why?
Because they never expect a ring. Anyway.
Wow. Oh, okay, back to what the smart person in the room was saying.
Yes. I couldn't help it. It was there. Had to run with it.
It depends on how you look at it. If you're talking in the way the deck is stacked in this society currently, Christian white Christian heterosexual males have absolutely no advantages whatsoever.
No. I'm talking about the way the left sees it. You know, who's the most oppressed?
I would say the most oppressed would have to be the black female.
Wrong. It is, in fact, the aborted black female.
Okay. It taught me.
Ouch.
And that is the thing. I mean, you can use that. You can. That's what I used in the piece I was talking about, the Gosnell trials. I was on a website, an open forum, that does absolutely slant left, and I, you know, there's a sort of social justice-y side of that website, and I was going through, and I posted some pictures of you know, the evidence in the Gosnell trial, and I got a lot of beaten down arguments from people like males that said, I can't talk about abortion because I'm a male. I'm never going to have to be a part of that conversation. It never is going to come down ultimately to me to make that decision. Therefore, I should have no voice in the abortion discussion. And this is from a person who said, I don't like abortion, but he was so beaten down by this privilege thing that he did not think that he had a real voice or any, he shouldn't have a voice to talk about abortion and how awful it is.
Wait a minute. So if I may, so what you're saying is people who are privileged in any aspect, By leveling the accusation of privilege, you're using that is used as a weapon to silence. It's a control device to silence them, because you're a man, you can't have a child, therefore you can't discuss abortion because you cannot be oppressed in by having an unwanted child.
Precisely.
Okay, absolutely. And
that is the premise.
That extends to every area.
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting.
That's how they use it. Yes, that's how it's used. It is used to invalidate your opinion based on your, you know, your privilege. That's basically what it is. That's what check your privilege means. Check your privilege means shut up because you don't know, so you can't say. Going through this thing, you know, he was having this crisis where he's saying, oh, I hate this. I don't like abortion at all, but I can't really advocate against it because I don't, you know, I am not allowed to. It's not something that I have any control over, so my opinion is invalid. Really, the person whose opinion is invalidated in all of this is the person who doesn't get a chance to air it ever. The person who is the most oppressed, I mean, you can go through it, is the aborted baby, because who knows if they were transgendered? Who knows if they were going to be gay? Who knows if they had, you know, whatever. What if you know, it was somebody who had a handicap of some sort? You know, we don't know. We didn't get a chance to hear from that person. Their voice was completely snuffed out before they had a chance to say anything. So, and this is not a religious argument right here. This is something that you can go into and play their game and win, because there's no way. There is no way that they can come back with anything that sounds remotely, you know, like a response to this. How are you going to respond to? Oh no, I have less. I am more oppressed than an aborted child. You can't do it. You can't do it. You sound like an absolute fool if you try.
Well, I think that's good. Another way I like to use it, what you're saying, because I like it, because what you've done is you've put it at a level where they can't reach that, and I love it. Another thing I like to do is, yeah, now we see the violence inherent in the system. Somebody saw the movie too. Another thing I really like to do is this. I like to take advantage of when liberals play that card. because they don't know how irritating they are. They don't know how they, and I've done this, and I'll be, there'll be a group of people, and some girl will say, you know, well, you're a man, you can't talk about this, or some guy will say, you didn't grow up in the streets like I did. I'll look at the group, and I'll say, yeah, I just want you to know, none of you grew up the way I did, and all of you are free to comment on my life and offer any wisdom you can in helping me be better. And that makes me look just so wonderful. I look ravishing. I look fantastic. And they look awful and satanic and evil, and people start hurting them. Then I got to pull them back, and then it gets violent. But you see what I mean, though? They make it so easy to look good by comparison.
Absolutely. It is, and that's a huge thing. And we need to make the distinction here that I am very, very rarely ever going to win over a liberal by using that that example of abortion being the least privileged. I'm never going to change a liberal's hardcore liberal's mind. Very, very rarely is that ever going to happen. But when you use that in the context of a broader discussion, when other people are paying attention, it is very, very, very difficult, if you have any shred of humanity, decency, or logic, to make the case, you know, that somehow this other person who is currently able and allowed to express their opinion has less privilege than the child that was aborted. It is insanely difficult. It tarnishes the credibility instantly of the person that you are debating. You don't come back from that. It's impossible.
I think it's great.
Can I ask one thing? When we talk about liberals, are we talking about the hardcore 10%? Or do we also include, say, the people that just follow that because it sounds good and it makes them feel good? You know, in other words, the 30% that could be converted. Because to me, there is a hardcore 10% of this nation that is a diehard liberal set that you will never be able to have a conversation with, you'll never convert them, and you'll never convince them of anything. They're absolutely convinced that conservatives are Satan and a few other things, and that we should be exterminated or something close to it. And I really don't see those as the people that I wish to engage or the people that I wish to convert or really anything else. I see it as the middle ground, the people that you start with, the people that you start with the lowest hanging fruit, and you work your way up. So you start with the people that are centrist. And when they see that you're doing what you're doing, they come over to your side. And when more and more centrist people sway your way, then the liberals say, well, wait a minute, what is it about these guys that are swaying the centrists? And then they stop and they start to listen. So you pick away at the people that are most apt to listen to what you have to say and listen and actually look at your example. And then you slowly work your way into the 30% or so of liberals that you can actually engage in conversation. That, to me, is the key. And that, to me, is where you make your inroads, because the top 10% you just really can't. And so I want to ask that question, having defined it, where do you see the engagement at? Because when we say liberals, I really feel like there's two types there, those that can be and those that can't. And so I want to ask that, because I really am not going to engage that 10% because they're just unreasonable, period.
I love engaging that 10% because they're unreasonable. And the reason is, I actually, because of exactly what you just said, I'm preaching to the 30% when I talk to the 10%. They, because they're absolutely hooked, remember, and I always say this, conservatism is choice, liberalism is control. Liberals, hardcore liberals, are absolutely hooked on control and hate, right? Use that against them. So when you talk to them and they expose themselves and make themselves look terrible and try to say, unless you're, you know, this oppressed like me, I can't listen to you, and then you come out and say, Really? Okay. Hey, just so you know, everybody in this room, none of you have been through what I have, and I would love to hear the wisdom that any of you give on my life and how you can help me be better. That 10% gives you wonderful opportunity to reach the 30%. It's easy to say that we are the ones of freedom and liberty and the other side is of control, but it is much easier when you have one of those morons there to demonstrate it.
Yes, but you know, I'm happy when I get engaged in those kinds of discussions. The thing that we need to really highlight is the fact that if you don't know how to deal with these people, you should not engage. That's not something, it's just, if you are not experienced in dealing with the left on the same level that we are, it's not advisable to go into those situations, because chances are very good that you are going to get frustrated and let them, in fact, look like the better guy instead of you. So if you are not going to put a lot of effort into making fools out of the hardcore leftists, don't try, because it's not going to end well, and it's just going to leave you frustrated and upset.
And that's where I don't have a problem. I'll be like, Jersey, I got one for you. I don't really have a problem with that, because that's not where my gifts are at. My gifts are lie in a different place. So engaging those people really isn't where my strengths lie. My strengths lie with in different areas. We'll just leave it at that for now. So that's my question. Where do you differentiate? Where you say to conservatives, that are like me, hey, that's okay. Go do what you do and do it well. Versus people like you and Ryan, where it's like, yeah, let's have a go at it. So, how are people going to know the difference? Where can other conservatives figure that out? Because listening to Ryan, he's like, yeah, let's engage them, but or Corey or whoever it is, somebody is.
Actually, it's Corey this time. There are times.
Okay. Sorry.
We share an account. It's all good. I think for me, engaging the super hyper extreme liberal isn't really my strong point. I tend to be better working with the people who are more in the middle, the ones who are willing to engage and discuss ideas. However, this last Saturday, I had an opportunity to meet a flaming leftist at the gym, and he struck up a conversation with me, and before I knew it, he was telling me about his life, his growing up years in this really rough neighborhood in San Francisco, and how it was the white cops who were keeping everybody down, and how he had to fight for everything that he had, but he was just determined he wasn't going to stay there, and that his dad taught him that he needed to take responsibility for himself and blah, blah, blah. And so it was really kind of funny, because I had a lot in common with him on those points. I'd worked with high-risk youth. I had worked in neighborhoods not quite that rough, but close to it. And I agreed with him that personal responsibility is the most important thing. So fast forwarding 45 minutes, by the time the conversation was over, I hadn't convinced him on anything, but I learned a lot in the conversation, just listening and then asking him a few questions and just getting his perspective on some things, which I think will help equip me going forward. But the really funny thing was that when he started going off about how white men just hate Obama because he's black, I had built enough rapport with him in the previous 40 minutes that he actually listened to me when I said, hold on just a minute, that's where I disagree. Because just because you disagree with somebody doesn't mean that you hate them. The problem is that they feel that, we have disagreements on how to implement those laws. We agree. We want to help the poor people. We want kids to get outside and play and eat healthy. But the problem is that we don't believe that the federal government should be telling people how to do that. And then I said, let me ask you something. Do you think, because, it's so important that we have fathers in the household, and I agree with you, do you think that because of all these big government programs that are out there, that a lot of people have seen the government take the place of the father or the husband in the home? And he was kind of speechless. But I know that it made him think. And so, no, I didn't win any big political debate on Saturday, but I was able to build a relationship, however short. And Andy wants to say something. Go ahead.
Look, here's the bottom line. Corey is not naturally given to that area, that kind of debate. But just by being around people who are, Corey has gotten very good at it. I agree, we all have our different gifts, but we need to train each other. Just like Corey has trained me and made me much better at talking to people who are not hardline or whatever. You know, I'm used to bomb throwing. Okay, I'm used to, you know, bayonet wielding, and I want to see blood on my sword. I'm not used to talking to people at dinner parties. And she's actually domesticated me. Yeah, I'm into nukes. And, I think we conservatives need to learn from each other more, too. Yeah, we have our gifts, but we can also grow from hearing each other. Corey talked to this guy who was an activist, and she beat him handily, quite honestly, and reached him at the same time.
Right, because I listened a lot more than I talked, because I knew I couldn't pick him apart the way Andy would, and I knew that. I knew that limitation of mine. And so in my case, knowing my limitation, I was able to become the good guy by listening, by asking questions, and then finding some areas of agreement, because we really did have some areas of agreement. I care passionately about inner city kids and education, just like he does.
See, that's kind of where I find myself is – engaging them where I have a spirited debate really isn't my strength. Where I excel is imitating what my best friend Roy taught me, which is to shut my pie hole and listen, which I would like to admit took me years, and if you ask some people, I'm still not good at. But I listen. And then what my best friend Roy would do is he would ask deeply insightful questions that would make me stop and think and go, And so I got pretty good at that. And so for me, when I engage people like this, it's to listen, and to listen for quite a while, and then to ask some questions, and then let them talk, and then ask more questions. And pretty soon, you can, with the questions, you can start to drive them in the way you want them to go. But I just, that to me is where my strengths lie, is to ask those questions and get them to think. And to plant the seeds, if you will. Fishy?
Well, yeah, and this is what we were talking about last week when we were talking about the sort of point scoring that goes on. And I think that's a huge distinction. If we're out there in the arena fighting people on an ideological basis in public, we want to destroy leftists. We want to score points. We want to make them look foolish. If that's our calling. That's what we want to do. Point scoring is all about getting on the board and humiliating leftists for the stupid things they do. No one does that better than Kurt Schlichter, and you can see that in his Twitter and read it in his books.
He's a master at it.
Right, and what the rest of us that are not equipped that way probably need to focus on is getting out of the point scoring because that's not going to profit us if we aren't at expert level. The way JD was saying, don't engage. If that's not your comfort level, take your skills where you find them strongest.
How do I level up?
See, I don't ever want to get into that. I have no time for that. But that's me. That's my preference, and that's my skill set. I'm not equipped to go there. But instead of focusing all the time on having our say and getting our words out and believing that those words will have magical transformative qualities and properties, Corey reversed that and did that completely backwards. And her listening had magical transformative properties. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's one thing to humiliate a leftist. It's something completely different to make them go away from a conversation and say, hey, that was a cool interaction. I mean, that is the hugest win. It is a Pyrrhic victory to continue to have a you know, to go into a discussion with a leftist and, you know, both fight. And sure, if you come out the victor in the end, that's great. But he's still going to come back the next time and, you know, continue on the same path that he's on. He's not. You're not going to change that person just by continuing the sort of circle, the cycle of division that's currently there.
And it's also a time kill. It's meant to distract absolutely. You and waste your time.
Yes, thank you very, very much. That is absolutely correct. I've written about that as well. There's a huge segment of the left that does that just to mess with people, to get them off task, to go into to wrap you into discussions where there's no way that you're ever going to be able to weed through all of the junk that they're putting out there, and you naturally feel defensive. You need to come back. You need to show no that you're wrong. Here's what I have. This is where I'm right. You're never going to win that discussion. That's where I'm going to draw the line. I'm going to draw the line where somebody, if you are encountering a leftist and they are talking over you, not talking to you, and this is the case the majority of the time. If you're talking to a leftist who's talking over you, not talking with you, then get the hell out. Because that's never going to go well for you, because you are not Kurt Schlichter. You do not have the magic of language. You don't have that law skill to get in there and fight that. Find someplace else to hone those skills. You could do it anonymously. It's much easier to go on an anonymous website and discuss these things than it is to be on Facebook or Twitter, where you will waste your time, because there are consequences for leaving an argument early. I mean, that's not where you want to fight these fights.
Can I make one quick point?
No, you're not allowed.
Preach just gotta.
Can I make one long-winded 3-hour point?
Sure, Andy, that's why we're here.
Andy, okay. we are here to listen to you. That is one of the functions of this show.
That's that, JD.
You're so good to me.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, I think this is the big thing. Two things. Number one, check your motives. Are you bringing the message to them for them or for you? Do you want to change their lives, make their lives better, unleash their lives with capitalism, or you just want their vote? Check your message check your motives at the door, because if they're bad, they'll pick it up. Okay, and secondly, we make one big mistake. We hide. Once your message is right, I mean, once your motives are right, stop hiding it. Don't hide your heart for them. And what I mean is this: you can hide in two big ways. You can either hide by simply going out amongst them and blending, and not making any impact, just becoming the good guy who never says what they think. Or you can hide by isolating yourself and being, you know, the bomb thrower from behind the lines.
I'm not going to knock grenades. They are effective, but yeah, I see your point.
And they are very entertaining.
Oh, yes. But, ever go fishing?
Yeah. But here's what I mean. We hide who we are because we're afraid of their hate, honestly. We're afraid of their hate. And what I'm saying is this, guys, we need to train conservatives to get out into the community and not hide. I'm not saying don't hide that you're a conservative. No, 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 because we all know how some conservatives will be then. They'll be a bull in a china shop, right? I'm saying find love in yourself for these people and then don't hide it. Show them how much you want them to succeed, and then you'll be able to explain it better. If it's not for them, that's when you're going to start shooting them to pieces. Or if you're being selfish and you're worried more about what they think of you, that's when you're going to start hiding amongst them. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it does. Fishy, bring us the Garrity.
Well, yeah, one thing that reminded me of is that so often I'm listening to Andy and I'm hearing the sort of ways that he can take our positions and not water them down, not rob them of all their meaning, but put them in a way that resonates with people better, depending on where they are. And of course, that's obviously from doing things like Corey did, listening, refining her, there's that word again, refining her approach based on the things that she's hearing. That is so huge, and it tied in so well with a piece from Jim Garrity today at National Reviews from the Morning Jolt, which is the daily email that they put out, and it talks about this key demographic. We've been talking for ages about low-information voters are the ones who have elected some really bad politicians and got us into some really awful places. But Garrity is talking about a Pew survey that's talked about people's attitudes and how confused they are. And what's happening is he's arguing these are not low-information voters at all. These are people who believe completely wrong things based on where they get their information, the kind of things that happen. I'm looking for a particular example. And it's crazy the way that they will toss terms around like they know what they mean. And it's because people don't want to look stupid or feel stupid, but they toss around these terms and they don't understand them. The survey said, Pew used a survey to determine whether people who say they are libertarians actually know what the term means. 57% correctly identify the definition with proper corresponding ideological label. But looking at the other answers, an astonishing 20%, it says, say that someone who emphasizes freedom and less government is a progressive. And 6% say that the definition is an authoritarian.
Commies.
And 6% say that definition is communist.
Better read than dead.
These are people who just, there's 20% to 32% in this one question of people who do not understand the question and can't put those things together. And we can lament all day long about how well or poorly informed they are, but that's a charge on us. And Garrity goes down at the end of the article to talk about which argument is more likely to be effective. And he goes into three arguments on school choice, one based on conservative principles, one based on libertarian principles, one based on the simple statement that decisions should be in the hands of parents who know what's best for their own children. That is the same argument for A, for B, and for C, in essence. There's no watering anything down. But you don't say all the words. Oh, I'll give you the three examples, sure.
Give them examples.
A, school choice is a good idea because it is consistent with the conservative principles that the government is closest to people, is most likely to make the best decisions, is most accountable for those decisions, and is easiest to correct those decisions. That's A. B, school choice is a good idea because it is consistent with the libertarian principles that power of the state should be limited and the power of the individual should be maximized. That's B. And C was the one I said. School choice is a good idea because it puts decisions in the hands of parents who know what is best for their children. Radically different approaches, but it's what Garrity's argument is that we're going to have to think of better and simpler ways to explain things that don't depend on the terminology, the language that we speak, the little identifiers that we go to when we talk about these issues. And I think we're developing a breed of wonkishness, a strain of wonkishness in ourselves that wants to talk about all those little details, those of us who are hyper-political, And we're losing the ability to talk to other people rapidly just because we're speaking Greek.
Well, you don't mean it unless you are saying it from a perspective of principle. I mean, it's clearly an issue that you have if you try and talk about things on a common sense basis. I mean, you aren't in line with your principles, and you aren't promoting your principles. Therefore, you are just some rhino nut job and should be ignored.
Can I really quick on this one? I kind of connect like this. I say, look, when you look at your child, that newborn child, or maybe they're a teenager or whatever, you have dreams for them and what they'll become, and they have dreams for how they want to become. Let me ask you something. Does some bureaucrat in Washington have dreams for how your child will become or what they can become?
Yes. A good, solid worker.
Oh, yeah, my bad. I'm sorry. I thought I meant good dreams. I'm sorry.
I apologize. Good dreams. Oh, okay. Never mind.
But here's all I say, and I tell you what, and this, by the way, crosses all demographic barriers. I just ask them, you have dreams for what your kid can become, all right? And your kid has their own dreams. Shouldn't you and your child be in charge of directing those dreams rather than somebody who they have dreams for their own kids? They don't even know your child. Should your child's path be directed by people who don't have dreams of what they'll become?
It's a pretty simple argument, and it's pretty effective.
It's also extremely powerful because it punches them right in the gut, because if they say, no, I want Washington to decide my children's dreams, they're lying to themselves and everyone else around them.
And, here's what the left's response to this. There is only one response to this. You are dumb, so you can't make an informed decision. So that's where they're coming from. That's the only way that they can, that's their premise. That's where they're coming from, is that you are not as smart as us. Therefore, you should not have the ability to choose where your kid goes to school.
And you can see
that. That's the Dexter defense.
It is completely demonstrable that.
You can see this. You can see this when you go to a school board meeting, when you go and testify in front of an education board, when you go and attempt to be around people that are education executives, as you would call them. That is what they do. They use their language. They use that particular, bent that they have toward their technical speak in their particular field, and they shut you down. New studies have shown blah, blah, blah. They're telling people now parental involvement is detrimental to some children. This is the sort of thing they will find a way to alienate you from the process, because they want you to believe you are too stupid to make those decisions. That is completely a conscious thing they're doing.
And it's what is behind 99% of what the left says, is that the individual is not smart enough, the collective is smarter, therefore let's go with what the collective says, which is counterindicated in everything. I mean, we've seen what the collective does when it's in charge, and mob rule is not pretty, nor is government planning, that sort of thing. It's not good. It doesn't work.
Everything that the leftists do points to exactly why government control doesn't work. I'll give you a classic example. I know it's overused, but currently with Obamacare, $1.7 billion, and the website still doesn't work properly. You know what I could do with $1.7 billion? You know how many companies I could start? Not company, companies. How many great companies started on just a shoestring, less than $100 million? Look at Amazon, for example. They were in the red for a long time. Now they're in the black. And you're going to tell me that Amazon needed $1.7 billion to get their website up and running? I don't think so.
Yeah,
Yeah, but you see, it doesn't take much money to offer people a good choice. Okay, it doesn't take much money to offer people a good value meal at McDonald's that you hope they'll buy over Subway or against Burger King. Okay, which just left our country, and it doesn't.
We don't like kings here anyway.
Yeah. But it takes an enormous amount of money to control their choices, to make them choose your product. Okay? See, because, you know, what I said earlier is, hey, you have dreams for your child. Shouldn't you be – they don't have dreams for your child. They don't even know your child. Shouldn't you be the one directing those? Now, what a leftist – like I was raised by leftist academia, what they might say is, yes, but we have expertise. We have great ideas to offer in helping your child come to that point. Yeah, my response is – then if you have such great ideas to sell, then why won't people choose them freely? Why do you have to spend that many billions to force them to choose your ideas if they're so good? My goodness, you shouldn't be able to hold them back. The fact is they're not good. The fact is the reason it takes so much money is because it takes that much power to take away choice. It's really cheap to give choice. And it's cheap to offer options that people will choose over other choices.
Yeah. And, you know, when the most that the government knows is that, you know, when your kid's birthday is, you know, it just, that's what they know, fingerprints. They've got your DNA. They know what your birthday is. But they don't know anything about the individual. They don't know anything about the strengths and weaknesses, the person, the individual.
But they're certainly mining some data, aren't they?
Oh, they're mining it, but that doesn't mean that they're mindful with it. It doesn't mean that they're actually using it the way that an actual person. You know, we had this discussion. I'm sorry, I want to take a quick left turn here. Fishy and I had this discussion a few weeks ago where it was kind of like a bolt from the blue where we discovered that micro-targeting is not a modern invention. It's not something that is this brand new technique that, oh my God, the left has discovered this thing. No, they're using a massive system to do something that has been used since the first election. It's going to people and knowing what they like, what they want to talk about, and what is important to them, and you know, talking to them about it, listening to what their needs are, and talking about their needs with them. This is something. You know, I mean, this goes back to what we've been talking about this whole discussion: listening to who you're talking with, and not just trying to force your agenda on them, listening to them and finding points of commonality and emphasizing those points. The government doesn't do that. They pretty much just say, here, this is what you're going to be eating, enjoy it or else. That's a pretty big distinction to be made.
Okay. I'd like to make one point. Fishy, yes, they are data mining. Yes, they are gathering all this information. But you know what they don't collect? They don't collect what our dreams are, what our desires are. Oh, they can get our shopping list, but sometimes those shopping lists aren't needs or desires per se. They're what we need to subsist. Oh, I need these clothes so that I can have this job. Oh, I need this training so that I can go do this job. It doesn't talk about what our desires are, what our dreams are, what we want so much to achieve in this life. That's why I look at it and I go, well, data mining works, but only to a point. It doesn't tell me what's in a person's heart.
No, and it wouldn't. And the purpose is not to worry about your heart at all. The purpose of data mining is to get you to be able to predict a behavior based on a certain set of identifiers that you, you know, adhere to, and that's fine. And that's why the personal contact that we do, whether it's in the service of a campaign or if it's your lifestyle, of going out and reaching out to people that don't necessarily agree with you and looking at them as humans and not part of a group that you've got to get under your belt. That's why the personal touch is so powerful, because no matter what they're sending someone in an impersonal card or over an impersonal robocall or via an impersonal email that they might stick your name on, the personal touch is going to have far more influence. And that's why I'm so concerned when we don't engage or we stay in our conservative, you know, little gated community that we build up, where we talk about just, you know, being in the same homogenous sort of group where everyone does what we do, everyone goes where we go, everyone eats what we eat, that sort of thing. Yeah, the left is doing that from a top-down thing, but we do those sort of things ourselves too, and we self-select and we self-segregate because it's comfortable, because it's less fighting and friction in your life. But just like we talk about religious evangelism, this is the same exact thing we've got to face, is that you are not going to let someone catch your viral excitement and ideas and hope for them if you're sitting in your house, you know, or in your neighborhoods or in your little clubs, and that's all you do.
Well, then others, get out of the bubble. Get out of your bubble and engage people.
But the problem with that, Brass, is that it's much easier to just go up to somebody and say, you know, that Obama, he really sucks. And here's this article that I saw the headline, and it's really, really, I mean, the stuff that he's doing, he's going to put all gun owners in FEMA camps. I mean,
reading Alex Jones right now.
No. Don't even go there with me, because it's not Alex Jones.
I call Top Bunk, by the way. I call Top Bunk.
There is a cottage industry that is, I mean, we've talked about it here before, that profits off of scaring the living, you know, crap out of conservatives with headlines that don't match stories and just
clickbait. You wrote the article on this.
It is, but seeing it and seeing going through these stories and it is easy. It is extremely easy to read a headline and share it and say, we've got to stop this guy. He's just the worst. And you know, that is just the definition of easy. Instead of you know, clicking on the article maybe and reading what the story says and saying, oh hey, this is incongruous here. This headline and this story don't match in any way, shape, or form.
And I absolutely 100% agree with you. Now here's my question to you, because I deal with it, and I deal with it. Well, I haven't dealt with it this summer, but I'll give an example. When I'm out at the battleship and I'm chatting with some of the guys in my group, they will do this where they're like, did you read that article? Or did you see that headline? And basically all I'm getting is a live version of the Facebook. Click on this link. Oh my God, we got to stop this guy. So I'm going to take a right turn, since you took a left one, and ask, how do we engage conservatives so as to dial that back or stop it cold and turn them towards what we like, solutions? In other words, okay, is removing him from office really going to be a solution? Do we engage that and have that conversation, or do we move past it and say, you know, we're stuck with him. How do we come up with solutions for what to do when he's gone? That's where I've chosen to go, but I'm willing to hear another side. Maybe I'm taking the wrong approach or just too far-sighted and I need to engage it. Where do we engage that sort of behavior? Because I want to know.
It's tough, and it really varies by person. Sometimes you come across somebody who just shares indiscriminately and is all about the headline and doesn't want to hear anything that you have to say. But informing them that, hey, this is a fake headline, this is a fake story, is always a good first step. It's always good to go in there. And I'm a huge advocate of this. I know we want to shift topics in just a second, but I'm a huge advocate. I call on anyone who's on social media, on anywhere, if they see a fake headline, please, please, even if you're risking looking like a jerk, go into the comment section and say, this is a fake headline, this is a hoax story, this is a hoax site. So please try and read the article before you share it. Go in and do that and get other people, please. If you see one of these things, message me, because I will also go in there and I will tell those people, hey, cut it out. This stuff is wrecking our communities. It is hurting our movement because we take time off task to be distracted by these ridiculous headlines that are not true, and they cause people to leave the movement, to go further into their bubble. So if we don't go in there and we don't do something about this blight, then we are going to suffer the consequences of that. And with that, since I still have the mic, we're going to shift. We are going to make a complete right turn over to what Ryan has been begging to talk about this whole time, is that is a piece that he came across on Google Plus, and the gap between conservatives and liberals when it comes to propaganda, and it is kind of a similar topic. The gap between liberals and conservatives when it comes to propagating their material on the web. Whereas the conservative side, we really don't get much training from anyone. I mean, we just don't. It's not something that is pushed through our communities. It just doesn't show up. The left trains their foot soldiers. They train their every bit of their side gets trained, and I'm sure Andy can testify to that. But Ryan, please continue.
Okay, muted, Ryan. Well,
there you are.
Yeah, this post was from 2012, and it was a prominent progressive on Google Plus teaching people, okay, you know, this is a new network. Here are the best ways to get involved. Here are the best circle count and build up your followers, and if you build up your followers, you can build them up by talking on other posts and just commenting, not posting too much. Here are some shared circles that you should add and work with and comment on. Here are the main you should be active in, where you can get your material and your training. And in this hangout every week, a lot of the time we talk about training. We talk about how to speak with people, both hardcore leftists and centrist people who aren't as interested in politics. And we cover a lot of different topics, but one we haven't really talked about much is how we can really train people to be better on social media. I think we need to make a more concerted effort to have some of the bigger conservative people on here. Like, I looked at Fishy and Leslie's profiles today. They both have about 30,000 followers. I have like 1,000 or 2,000. So I could use some pointers on how to get more engagement, how to get more followers, how to reach a bigger audience. And I think as a part of that, we should be teaching what to do with social media activism. We should be sharing shared circles. We should be encouraging, hey, I just met Peter today. So we should be encouraging meeting new people, commenting on their posts. We should make a concerted effort that when someone like Free Radical Network makes a post, or Andy and Corey make a new video, everyone share it multiple times just so it gets out there. And we all have different people that we interact with, different people that trust us. And I think if we need to make a concerted effort to train those in our ranks so we can have a better influence. I need to have a bigger influence. And I think we can make a good dent in the progressive influence on social media if we work together and do that type of stuff.
Also, sharing the refineries videos is a very good first step, and share them early and share them often because they're really good and helpful and stuff. I'm not biased.
Well, one thing that would help me is just because I don't have a ton of time to spend on social media because I'm at work all day and I shouldn't be on it all day, is if you guys could just tag me on something, then I'll definitely share it as soon as I can. Go ahead.
There's extensions, Corey. One of them is called DoShare, where you can schedule when your post goes out. So we tag you in something, you come home and spend a half hour at night looking at those, and you can schedule it to go out whenever you want. So the next day at 9 o'clock when the traffic is highest or that kind of thing.
Okay.
So you can spend 20 minutes, but you'll be sharing things throughout the day because you get everything scheduled.
Buffer
does. That's something I need to take more advantage of.
Buffer does something similar, if that works for you.
Yeah, if you guys could just send me info on it, that would be great.
Yeah, because I get tired of being the only one training her in all this tech stuff.
Oh, please. He doesn't even know what the code is.
Where do I hear all these voices?
We are in fact, just a part of a solipsistic nightmare for you, Andy.
Stop right now.
Okay.
You said the bad word.
Yes.
Andy is a married man. I have no sympathy for you.
we definitely need to do a better job of that. There are resources out there. There absolutely are. From tons of different places that have great trainings on this stuff. Again, the problem is that it's not pushed out to us the way that it should, and we don't push it as much as we should. The videos on YouTube, there are tons of videos about social media activism and real life activism, getting out votes. I came across Fishy shared an American Enterprise. No, it wasn't an American Enterprise Institute. It was one of our get out the vote type groups, and this was a year ago, and it had 100 views on it. It had great content, insanely good content, and it only had 100 views. I came across that video a few months ago, and it only has 100 and something views still. It's 50 people, 50 more people watch that, and I'm sure some of them were from me sharing the video. So there's so much stuff out there that could help us that is not effectively pushed to our communities, or we aren't paying enough attention to it. I don't know what it is, but it is not emphasized. Maybe it is because we have so many people who are, we, that's the perennial problem for conservatives, is that we work. There are so many of us that can't do this on a full-time basis.
Well, maybe if you combined get out the vote training with dancing kittens, I'm just saying you'd get more views.
Wait.
Totally
kittens
that.
Training. Kittens training you how to vote. That's how you do it.
That's good.
Nice.
I'm totally for that. I mean,
I just grab small kittens and gesture with them.
Oh gosh. I saw a video on G+ today. It was some cats following something, but it made it look like they were dancing to Turn Down for What? And, totally make me think, Turn Out for What? As God, this is where my head goes. Don't start with cats.
No, you're right, Fishy. I mean, it really makes you think, doesn't it?
These are the deep questions of the day. It's how we can use cats
right to
influence people to watch training for get out the vote measures and social media tools.
But that does bring up something that I have been thinking about for years, ever since the beginning of leadership of the Tea Party group that I had started, is that thing that Brass is talking about, that we have jobs, that we have occupied things, families, stuff to do. Corey has, this job as well that keeps her busy all through the day when high traffic or, people are in and out. And perhaps what our movement lacks, and still lacks, even though I've noticed this for ages, is the 5, 10, or 15-minute activism sort of suggestion, toolbox, whatever. And maybe we start looking actively for some of these resources and collating them together, trying to put all of the things that we find in one place. I know there's a spot in the conservative union community for that, sort of the toolbox. We've not made very good use of that. And that is something that as we get go through our day and we see something that's particularly helpful, or as we go out and search out reference videos that are really good, that we take that and start building a database based on some file, based on the things that we know that we're short on. And it's a resource that we can, tag people on. Here's the toolkit that you can go to at any time. You don't have to be a member of the community to find it. I mean, that's something we could build long term. It obviously, too, the 5, 10, 15 minute thing is huge. If you are not thinking about politics except when you sit down at the computer at the end of the day to unwind and you're just checking your feed and whatever, there's something you can do right there. But there's also 5, 10, 15 minute intervals that you could be using throughout the day, say when you're in line at the grocery store or when you're sitting in the bleachers watching your kid play a sports game of some sort, whatever those might be. Years of that are way past.
Thank you for saying this, because this is something I was about to bring up before you said it, is what about, and I hate to say this because now that I'm the new webmaster, it's more work for me, but what about a page of links that we start off with just links and we'll start to organize it, but it starts out as just a set of links on how to train people, and then we can start to, as we gather more, organize them the way it needs to be organized. We can start to put it together into a good, solid database to train people, because I think that you don't start with, I'll give an example. The way Amazon.com is organized right now is not the way the website started. You don't start that way. You build to it. So why not do the same thing? Why not find the links? We'll slap up a web page on our website. We can mirror it on the others so that they're, it's in three different places, and we can continue to add to it. And as we get more things, we can start to organize it the way it needs to be organized, but at least it's there. If Jersey's talking about this YouTube video, I'm thinking to myself, why can't we just put that up on our website and have a link on how to train people? It seems like something that we should do. I mean, if we're talking about it, why not? We can even make a page on it that allows people to do this. I don't see a reason why not. We can put it under the street team, wherever we want. I mean, we can have that discussion later, but the point is that we gather this information and have it collated, and then we can figure out how to organize it better as we go along. Because at least then we're collecting it rather than, well, now we have to go out and collect all this information. Get what we have now and add to it as we go.
The important thing that I really want to point out is that you can't just have a page with a list of resources, because the fastest way that you get somebody to click away from a page is have nothing but links there. If there's no reason for the person to go to the link, I mean, there are plenty of places that have resources just listed. It's more than that. The problem is also getting people to go to the links and give them a reason to check out the links. That's, I mean, that was part of the discussion that we had last week about.
I agree.
About how
but you're still hiding the resources. They're still hidden because we don't know how to organize the page. At what point do we put up something to say, here, and then we can organize it so people have more click-throughs? I mean, at this point, that YouTube video you referenced still has, 100 and maybe 150 links or 150 clicks? What happens when we put it up and then it boosts it to 300? We've got to have some way to organize this, at least so that we have a list somewhere that we can start to share.
Okay, let's just talk this through here really quick, because one of the things that a list like this, a page like this does, it doesn't necessarily affect the people who are floating by on the site, oh, there's a resource list here. But those of us who are aware of what's on it can find resources at our fingertips to send out. And if you look at that as the beginning of this process, is building a resource list that we can go back to, that we'll know is there, then when we come up across something topical for a person, we select the item or items that are there and topical to that person and can shift them that way. And guess what? You become the source for what people want to know or how to do something. You're the guy that they go to, because you're obviously going to have a link on it, because every time someone has a question, you're that guy. Now, that said, look at the great resource we have here out of Andy and Corey that we found just from a video that had a few views on it. And JD saw this, and I'm telling you, 2:30 in the morning, 1 year ago this month, he's talking about, have you seen this video? Oh my God, stop everything, click that. And that's how we got Andy and Corey, and that's how they ended up with support from us, and then more videos that they're doing. They're going to conferences all over the place. I get to meet them this weekend in Dallas. That is a resource too. And as we are sharing each other's stories, as we're sharing each other's blog posts or videos or everything, that builds everybody's influence and gets those resources out there further. So you never know where sharing something like that can take you. Just saying.
Sure. Absolutely. And that's entirely true. I just have a hatred for pages of lists with listed links. It annoys me that I've seen them. I've seen great compiled lists of links that go to waste because they just go to waste. I hate that. That just drives me nuts when you have great resources that get wasted. We should start off with the lists, but getting them out there, getting the content out there is paramount. It is absolutely, we need to get that done. I also really do want to briefly talk about the conference. I mean, I want to get that before we get out of here. I want to hear what the Party of Choice and Fishy, what you guys are doing there in Dallas coming up.
I think I'm going to Gilly's. There's some mechanical bull riding involved. you're laughing.
Whiskey will be involved. I know it.
Yeah. So stuff like that. Maybe some class here and there, and occasional speaker, whatever.
Yeah, I think we're just really excited because we'll have a vendor table and we'll get to really start spreading the word about our ads and what we're trying to do to change the narrative. I've enjoyed getting to know the lady who's coordinating all the vendor booths, and so now we're just trying to figure out when we're going to have time to pack between now and early on Thursday morning.
I'm gonna shout angrily at people as they walk by. That's just my plan.
I'm gonna drag everybody I know to their table. That's gonna be my job.
Yeah, we'll give me a bunch of business cards and flyers and say, go hand these out.
That's right.
I think it'll be fun. Hopefully we'll have lots of good stories to tell when we get back.
And then all the stories that we can't tell too.
Well, yeah, those won't be on the air.
What happens in Dallas stays on the internet.
Yes. I would love to know. I mean, I'm not really sure the area, but and I also don't know what the necessary things that you guys need to go through a training. I don't know what you need for that, but what is the likelihood, what is the possibility of a, I don't know, impromptu mini training going on at Defending the Dream Summit from the Party of Choice somewhere in the area?
Oh,
probably not very likely this time.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, it's not set up. There'd be no. I'd love to. Be great to do.
But if you come by our table, you'll get 15 seconds worth of mini trainings. I promise.
Well, that has to go on Instagram then, because that's what happens when you've got 15 seconds of content. You need to put it on Instagram.
I know that's your favorite, so we'll do our best to make you proud.
I spray my face down to look really sweaty and intense, and then I just yell at people. It works too. It gets them excited. They really feel there's hope.
Oh goodness. Anyway, no, I just really hope that this will be a good chance to build some groundwork in a new state.
Yep.
Like I said, get the word out on our materials that can go places without us, as in the ads. And, hopefully we can get some good training set up, too, and maybe do, like, a little mini-tour sometime, maybe after the first of the year, because we're really trying to get some training set up here in Denver because we're getting lots of requests for them. So we're just trying to find a location and a little bit of time to breathe so that we can make copies and get announcements out and all that. I've been kind of crazy lately.
Yeah, but we'll go anywhere, lady. Yeah. We'll go to Jersey and fix it. After the mess.
You and what army?
No, I mean, we'll go anywhere. We will go anywhere and do trainings. I would love it. Just love it. I just love meeting people and doing that kind of thing.
Awesome, and that's what we need. We need more party of choice activism and people who are trained by you guys, because, you know, Brass was asking earlier, where do you go to level up? You go to the party of choice. You go to watch the episodes of Refinery. You go out and you find resources, and that's how you learn. Because, you know, there are people out there with information, with content, and if you don't share that, if you don't check it out, then when you are sitting there at 1 a.m. with a huge just wall of text berating you on how you could be a conservative and all of those terrible, terrible things that they're telling you, that this liberal that you've been engaged in a discussion, that's not a discussion, futilely with for the past 3 hours, you're going to wish that you had paid more attention, because, you know, this is where you learn that stuff.
Well, so I gotta say, so basically what you're saying is Andy's going to teach me how to yell at people?
Oh, yes.
Sweet. I can do the whole sweaty thing. That's easy. I just don't know, you know.
Well, then you're halfway there.
Awesome. Well, it's Texas. It's hot, so it comes naturally.
Okay, being from Denver, I'm sure the whole sweaty thing will come very easily to us.
I can't. Okay, I'm going to drag you all back to seriousness for 1 second. That was really cute. But I cannot...
Killjoy.
Overstride. Yes! Why do you think my Twitter handle is now Scoldylocks? I'm just saying. But I cannot overemphasize the importance of the sharing, the content, the training, listening to the party of choice, reading the pieces there, getting those new concepts in your head. We have seen, and it's demonstrable for us at FRN, we have seen that the messages, the things that we're saying, the way we frame things is having a difference. We are impacting people, and we see it, and in the feedback that we're getting, we can point to people and where they were when we met them and the kind of things that they say and do and talk about now. We can see that progression for them, that they're thinking about things differently. And that, multiplied by all the people that we can get these resources in the hands of, is transformative. That's huge. And then if that doesn't work, we'll yell at him like Andy said. Now we can go back to not being serious.
Exactly. No, let's be serious, because let's end the show. I want to thank everybody for watching, and thank everybody who shares our stuff. Please do it more. Please do it more, because we need to get this information out there. I want to especially thank Brass for showing up, Peter Ream. You can catch him Thursday nights at 9 on Foreign Matters, which, if you want to know anything about what's going on in the world today, that's where you should go, because, I mean, the content and the breadth of the discussion is awesome. So thank you, Brass, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm pleased to be able to crash your show and show my privilege, my white heterosexual privilege, all over the place. So it was awesome.
We just had to go there. And thanks to Andy from the Party of Choice for being here, as always, and giving us the left's perspective and how they are trying to mess with us. And Ryan for being here and getting into this discussion about sharing content and training people up on the internet.
Thanks, guys.
And Fishy, of course, for, you know, keeping everything sane.
Scolding us.
Yes. All right. We will see everybody next week, next Tuesday night at 9:30. Hopefully Leslie will be back so that things return to normalcy as far as the sending out of the invites for the show and the basic functionality of the show goes. Who knows what else we might have in terms of guests or in terms of content, but I'm sure that it's going to be interesting. So thanks, everybody, for watching and sharing and being a part of the conversation in the chat room. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.